This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Shake them ropes. For a Friday afternoon slash evening, I'm Jeff Hawkins. With me, as always, Chris Novembrino. Chris, I'm kind of sad. We were supposed to have Rob on today, but then, of course, with what is going on, there is certain fallout that sometimes has to be dealt with, and unfortunately, that's what happened this week.
Yeah, no, that's it's not a great time right now.
Something very similar, yeah.
Yeah, I don't have the one thing, but I have the other thing. So these things happen.
Yes, the non-illness fallout type things.
Economic disease that's going around.
The economic disease, yeah. So keep Rob and his wife in your thoughts. Keep Chris in your thoughts.
And in your hearts.
Let's start with the brain first.
You can wow them into caring. That doesn't work. No. You start from the heart. You build a heart connection, and you just end run right around the brain.
Proud to have a couple sponsors this week, ZipRecruiter and Roman. We will plug them vociferously later in this show. Please make use of them if you can at this time, because shows them some love, shows us some love. So, after our show last week, which got some, I thought got some positive reviews. I was very, very happy with the feedback for the show. Turns out, Chris, this XFL story is even meatier than even I thought. So let me give you a couple things that have come out since we last taped. Number one, the number one creditor for the XFL in their bankruptcy? WWE, because despite not being connected officially, it turns out the WWE made a giant loan to the XFL prior to them shuttering. And of course, so now in bankruptcy court, you have secured creditors, you have unsecured creditors, and secured creditors are the ones that are going to get most of the money to begin with. They usually don't get all the money, but they get like a very high percentage. Like I'd say around 70% usually on average, if you're one of the first secured creditors to be paid off. But yeah, WWE, turns out Vince was loaning money quote unquote to himself, but not officially, so as not to be sued by any holders of the stock. Oh, it's so dirty, Chris.
This is one of the all-time great Vince moves. Hawkins, you let me get on the air without letting me use my microphone voice. You had me on my darn computer microphone. Now I'm back. Now my insights are clearer. Now I'm bright and speaking to the world in full stereophonic sound. But this is one of the all-time great Vince moves, I think, in terms of sleazeball moves. We don't have to like Vince. I'm not asking you to like Vince. I don't like Vince. But sometimes you've got to appreciate heel tactics for what they are. And is this not classic heel tactics?
What is it? There's a phrase in they're doing a Perry Mason prequel on HBO. And it's like, there's what is acceptable. And then there's what is legal. This is legal. It's purely legal. I'm not sure it's acceptable in any way.
That would kind of define everything that he's done over the last quarter, right? Like everything he's done's been largely legal, kind of around the edges of legal. Maybe we'll look into it and find that some things are less legal than others. He's certainly been just trying to go with, okay, like, what can I get away with? Not even, like, what's palatable. It doesn't matter. I just don't think he cares what anyone thinks about him anymore. He just cares what he can get away with.
I mentioned last week that I was very curious that Oliver Luck was not named as a creditor in the bankruptcy. The reason I thought he would be is because he had a guaranteed contract of $20 million with incentives to go up as high as $30 million, so long as he was not fired for cause. Well, it turns out when Vince decided to shutter the league, guess what, Chris? He sent a letter, which cannot be disclosed as yet due to legalities, with a number of reasons why Oliver Luck had to be fired right now for doing a poor job.
It's legal. It's legal.
Oh, my God. And see, I think Oliver Luck's going to be one of the first ones to take Vince to the brink in court. Oliver Luck is...
This is what he's been playing with for a while, right? He's been making a lot of enemies during this cycle here. And I think, you know, with the wrestlers, he thinks that he can get away with it, and he probably can with a large chunk of them. But Oliver Luck's a much bigger fish.
He's a man of means. His son, of course, NFL quarterback. He was in line to take over college sports, and he quit to take on this job. Look, it doesn't matter if Vince wins or loses in court. The strategy is always the same. You go into court, you ask for numerous continuances while you perform discovery, and, oh, Your Honor, we've found this, and we really need time to address this, and we're not ready to present our case as yet, Your Honor. And usually judges, if you don't know, have a very full docket full of cases, and they're very happy to take a bit of a break and just table this for later. So that's why they get away with it. And then eventually one side goes to the other and says, hey, let's settle this for pennies on the dollar of what was originally asked. And of course, you, as being on the other side of the World Wrestling Entertainment, have to sign a non-disclosure agreement so that nobody ever finds out about what happened behind the scenes.
So you would have to be a person of means in the first place to be able to deal with the kind of extended continuances, right? Like,
yes,
you know, you'd have to have the time.
This is how they split Punk and Cabana. In many ways, it just kept going on.
Punk and Cabana went on forever for those of us who remember that.
Yeah, and what happened was Cole Cabana assumed CM Punk was picking up the legal bills. And the legal bills kept on piling up because, you know what? Even if there are continuances, you still have lawyers billing to the client. So what happened was Punk was like, yeah, I need you to chip in some money. And Cabana was like, well, hold on, wait a second. I thought you said I was taken care of. And so they get to going. And eventually what happens is WWE, I think, was the one who decided to settle in this case. I don't think it was Punk, but of course, non-disclosure agreement. Can't find out what's going on either way.
And it disintegrated the friendship, right?
Yeah, but it's always standard with WWE that you're not allowed to say what happened so as not to disparage such an upright, family-friendly company.
This is a family business. A publicly traded family business.
Speaking of which, it's Q1 time. Guess what Vince said on this gobbledygook of a fake call. I am mad I wasted time listening to this thing live. You know, we're a family business. We're sleek. We saw some, you know, we're fast and fluid.
We're getting lean and mean.
Did not use lean and mean, but said we are able to adapt rather quickly to circumstances just due to our...
That's the most brazen sort of way of framing. It'd be one thing to say lean and mean. That would be a disingenuous way of presenting the cutbacks that were not necessary, but using the situation that we're currently in, the COVID-19 and economic times, as justifying becoming lean. But saying that you're able to adapt quickly to a situation is kind of in defiance of the way that they actually handle things going into WrestleMania. They tried to hang on to normalcy till the absolute last minute, and then in the transition away from normalcy, have tried to cling to normalcy as much as they could, rather than embracing the change.
Speaking of cuts you didn't need, yes, turns out that their profit was much higher than originally expected, even though they had downgraded it when COVID-19 hit. It turns out they made some adjustments, around last week or so, and have now revised upwards their profits for first quarter. They're doing fine. Network subscriptions, they would not give numbers on paid subscriptions when asked. Always a
How could you know? It's a carrot. You can get the WWE Network for free so many different ways at this point.
WrestleMania was the most socially active WrestleMania of all time, which means absolutely nothing. It means a lot of people on Twitter did hashtags. Doesn't equal money. This is what they were saying on this entire call. I'm listening to this going, do people believe this? Now, I did learn something because this call was at 5 p.m. yesterday, Eastern time. And I did not know, because the only calls I've ever listened to before are WWE calls. I've never listened to any other stock meetings or anything like that. Apparently, the 11 a.m. usual meetings for WWE are the outlier for most companies. A guy, I had been talking to Brandon Thurston, who really does a great job on WrestleNomics. If you've never heard his show, I recommend you listen to it on Voices of Wrestling Network. But guys who cover this stuff wrote me and corrected me, and they said, no, look, WWE is the unusual ones for doing this in the middle of a trading day. Usually what happens is they're done very, very early before trading, or they're done very, very late after training, or they're just press conferences, if you types of things. So I did not know that, Chris. I always thought everybody did their earnings reports this way.
No, they actually, I know this because of our friend and former sponsor, Robinhood. I still get notifications on stocks that I own from Robinhood, and they'll do their quarterly meetings, and they're always, like, or very often at the end of the trading day or very early, sometimes too early for me to, like, get up and listen.
Are they as double speak as this?
Some of them, yes. No, Vince, I will say this. There are some, I'm not going to, like, name companies or whatever, but there are some I've listened to that have been very clear, very lucid. I've left going, like, okay, I know what's going on. There's others where I'm like, I have no idea what the hell they just told me, and I couldn't tell you what is true and what isn't true. But, like, the Vince WWE calls have been, yeah, no, they're like.
Dude, he sounded like he ate 3 pounds of gravel and started to talk. He sounded horrible on this call. I couldn't believe that. Other big news. They're still trying to find another streaming partner, basically to give pay-per-views over to them and make more money that way. They said everything fell out. They were this close to a deal, Chris. But, you know, then COVID-19 happened and everybody got scared. See, it's their fault for getting scared. It's everybody's fault for getting scared.
I mean, if they go to an independent streaming service, like, would they be doing, like, pay-per-view on the streaming
service? Yeah, like Fight TV.
Or like ESPN buying Plus. A pay-per-view. Okay, yes. I thought, like, buying yes. a pay-per-view on YouTube or something.
Yeah, it would basically be, you know.
Then like, why would anyone buy the WWE Network?
Oh, Chris, you know. If you have the WWE Network, what else do you need in television?
I get that.
Comedy,
I get that.
It has action.
There's whimsy. There's tears. There's drama, action. Well,
Chris, this is why George Berrios was fired.
Yeah, because I questioned the party line too much here.
Well,
yeah,
because his baby was making the network stronger. And, hey, if there's money to be had elsewhere, screw this network. You know, and that's pretty much kind of what Vince said on this call. He's like, if there's money to be made elsewhere, we're gonna try and explore those opportunities, and you know, your usual double speak.
I mean, it's kind of wild to say that they're abandoning the network, though, because if you remember, the initial start of this big old rally of theirs in stock price was driven largely by the network.
Oh, they're not officially saying that they're abandoning the network. They're just saying they're exploring.
Once you're exploring putting the pay-per-views on an independent streaming service and maybe charging
certain pay-per-views, not
and maybe charging like $5 or $10 for them. I mean, I think that, you know, at that point you're starting to cannibalize.
Chris, they're not going to be charging $5 or $10. They want to charge the $49.99. They want to charge
that's
boxing
delusional.
Prices for
that's
WrestleMania.
Well, not going to happen.
Rumble.
Yeah, they need to go on to YouTube streaming, like, and look at the movies and see how much it actually costs to stream some of those movies. And, like, you know, I streamed a Star Trek documentary thing the other day. It was like $2.99.
Nerd.
Yeah, I'm fine with saying that, but I'm just saying, like, that's the price point on these places. And it was a fantastic documentary on Deep Space Nine, Jeff. And you're the nerd.
There's no such thing as a fantastic documentary on Deep Space Nine.
You
doesn't exist.
I am quitting. I'm about to quit the show. I'm about to lose another job.
Yes, I've triggered him. Finally, I got to him. It's great. No,
I don't like you very much right now.
That's fine.
And even less than normal, but like you're at a deep trouble.
God, you're like talking to Trisha. No. less than normal. No, I actually, Deep Space Nine's my favorite of the Star Treks if I had to have one. The other big news, no video game this year. There's supposedly a announcement coming from 2K Sports that will revolutionize things.
What, they're not going to do it anymore?
I don't know. I think this year or this next year might be, instead of a 2K type of thing, like an arcade, something else, you know, wacky racing game or something.
Oh, God, WWE racers would be, like, wretched. Oh,
they've done it.
No, I know. But like, I'm trying to imagine them doing it like on one of these modern systems and try to make it up to the snuff and the expectations.
Or, you know, one of those
performance level of these modern systems.
One of those NFL Blitz type games that's not really sports, but it's kind of like weird fighting hybrid type things where, you know, you can do combos and stuff and tackles. I don't know. I could see
that would actually be their best bet, and hope that, kind of like NFL Blitz, you accidentally back your way into a really fun playable system that's like simple but entertaining. Because I don't know if you know the whole story about Midway and NFL Blitz. It's funny you should mention that, but NFL Blitz was based off of Acclaim kind of making this football style game right around the same time they were working on the WrestleMania arcade game back in the day. The one where Shawn Michaels, you hit him and like the hearts would come out of him, and the like Undertaker would hit him with the
tombstone. Yeah, I remember this.
Yeah. That's when NFL Blitz popped up. But so it's interesting that you bring that one up of all places.
Actually, you know, the one I'm looking forward to, this is a little bit of a tangent, is Retromania, the ads that they did on NWA Power.
Yeah, it looks pretty good.
It's using the WrestleFest engine.
Right.
But it has like Zack Sabre Jr. and Colt Cabana in it. So I'm down with that.
And if you're asking me, I think they need to do a remake on the Virtual Pro Wrestling 2 engine and do something.
That was great. Using Thunderhawk or whatever his name was.
No, Virtual Pro Wrestling 2 is the engine that WCW versus NWO Revenge and WWF No Mercy is built on. Yeah, the Japanese version of it even had like a UFC style mode, which would be kind of fun to have, you know, in a game. So you do things on that game like have an MMA match against Andre the Giant, which I think is a great selling point for any wrestling game.
Anything else on WWE Q1 you wanted to note?
I don't think so. It's stunning to me. It's not surprising, but like to hear them say, oh, we're really healthy in the wake of the presentation of all of these cuts and everything. Like, boy, just takes a lot of balls, man. Takes a lot of balls to do what they did.
Time now to thank our sponsor, Roman. If you were to guess, on average, how many days people in the U.S. have to wait to see a doctor, what would you say? Well, Americans have to wait around 29 days to see a doctor in major U.S. cities. If you're dealing with a condition like erectile dysfunction, you want treatment as soon as possible. That's why our friends at Roman have spent years building a digital platform that can connect you with a doctor licensed in your state, all from the comfort of home. Roman makes it convenient to get the treatment you need on your schedule. Just grab your phone or computer, complete a free online visit, and you'll hear back from a U.S. licensed physician within 24 hours. And if the doctor decides that treatment is right for you, Roman's pharmacy can ship you medication to you with free 2-day shipping. You also get free unlimited follow-ups with your doctor anytime you have questions or you want to adjust your treatment plan. With Roman, there are no commitments, and you can cancel anytime. So if you're struggling with ED, go to GetRoman.com/VOW for a free online visit, free 2-day shipping. Once again, that's GetRoman.com/VOW for a free online visit and free 2-day shipping. And we thank Roman for their sponsorship of Voices of Wrestling podcasts, including Shake Them Ropes. Moving on, AEW has decided that they are going to do live tapings now that Georgia and Florida are both opening up somewhat. They have been deemed under the necessary or essential businesses clause of the Florida law. So it looks like they'll be going back to Daly's place in Jacksonville. I think that's
Don't get the point of live tapings. Like, I don't see the value. If you can't have an audience right now, I just fail to see the value added of live tapings other than to, like, stamp live on your product like some sort of USDA label where it doesn't really necessarily mean all that much.
It's the DVR proof stuff, I think.
Yeah, but I think if you just made a good pre-recorded product, like we've seen a lot of evidence that that can be completely viable and that wrestling consumers are willing to watch that, whether it's Lucha Underground or like people, especially right now, fans are so casual. They're not going getting all the spoilers and everything like that. And like wrestling is not talked about enough to where you'd have to be worried about people like blabbing about spoilers around the water cooler for any number of reasons right now.
Yeah, I know I sent you the numbers, or I thought I did. But nobody's watching wrestling anyways. Yeah, here it is. AEW, 731,000.25 rating, 24th. On the night. NXT, 665,000, 50th. Oh, that might be for the week. I don't know. Maybe it's the night. I don't know. But, like, nobody is lighting the world on fire on these Wednesday shows.
So I just don't think you'd have a, oh, my God, the spoilers are going to get out issue.
Yeah, Raw is down to 1.8.
They should be so lucky.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Raw is down to 1.8 million. Nobody's watching these shows because – I think, number one, a lot of people are watching news. Number two, a lot of people are just taking this opportunity to binge watch and be able to talk about that on the internet with their friends. There's just not a lot going on, and nobody kind of want to watch whatever it is this is, even though, which we'll get to, I loved both shows on Wednesday. I thought both were pretty darn good.
Love's a strong word, but I mean, there's certainly, like, we arrived at something much closer to a watchable product this week. I agree, but yeah, no, I mean, also, part of that's the transition. I mean, I remember, what was it, 4 or 5 weeks ago on, like, more normie Twitter, I was seeing people commenting on the weirdness of empty arena wrestling. So I think wrestling kind of missed the mark when people were like, taking a look at, like, oh, wrestling's still running? What's that look like right now? And then they see Bray Wyatt and John Cena.
Yeah. Oh, that's the other thing. Vince said on the call that they're going to be doing more of this stuff. And that's, you know, we already know that because of the Money in the Bank stipulation. Vince is going to go hard on the cinematic stuff because, you know, he makes movies.
I think this has given him an excuse to be the weird Ed Wood style director that he secretly always wanted to be.
Yeah. Not a lot for me to talk about on Raw.
Yeah, and I'm actually kind of getting the recap on Raw from Jeff here because I have found the main roster product to be so weird. Yeah. Who they're choosing to book McIntyre against, for example, and then like all the mid-card stuff. Because the WWE main roster wrestling style is so unenergetic. It's so crowd-dependent.
Here's what I don't understand. And I just may be limited to this is because who is in the Florida area versus who has to fly in. I do not understand why so many people from NXT are the squashed guys on Mondays and Fridays. Like, you have local workers you could rent for the night if you just want to beat somebody. But if there are people with, you know, potential, or say like Akira Tozawa, a guy who is your main guy in this cruiserweight tournament, who actually is in the lead in one of the divisions in your cruiserweight tournament, why are you putting him on to beat him?
I just don't get it. And I could make more sense of it if you were doing a series of tapings and you just wanted to keep a limited personnel on hand and you needed to do these sorts of things because you needed to work with a limited personnel and a limited palette of people. But in this case, you know, they're choosing to tape live still, so why not bring in enhancement talent?
Yeah, Drew McIntyre not connecting with me. He's a little too much of a self-aware champion for me to really dig into, and I don't know if any of the three stooges that Zelina Vega is bringing out there is being helped by getting beat up week after week after week. Austin Theory is the designated, gets no offense in and gets creamed guy. Angel Garza gets a little bit more, but not too much. And Andrade is kind of the leader of the group. He's the guy they're quote unquote protecting, but they're protecting him by, you know, all heels have to be cowards. So
yeah, and this the dynamic of the group is really nebulous too. Yeah. I just think it's, if you're talking about or people getting over, Austin Theory was a guy on this show 4 or 5 weeks ago. I was talking about as finally seeing why they kind of viewed him as maybe a star, maybe a future champion of NXT sort of talent. He had, he's got the star quality about him. But you would never know that if this is where you're catching him. He's just a goober right now.
Yeah, a lot of the chatter was about the Nia Jax Kairi Sane match. I haven't heard she's injured. I just think it looked bad, and I think people freaked out about it because it's Nia. And look, I love Kairi Sane.
Like, yeah, I think a lot of this is about WWE Kyrie too, right? Yeah. Like it's about, I'm upset that Io Shirai has not been. Yeah, it is about Nia, but it's also, I think, it's about Asuka, it's about Io Shirai, it's about Kairi Sane, the way the company doesn't treat them with respect in the booking. And then, to that point, that's how Kairi Sane arrives in this match where she's being jobbed out to Nia Jax, who is, being frank here, she's had nearly half a decade, more than half a decade at this point of training in ring performance. And it's just, it has not progressed. Whatever your assessment is of it 5 years ago or 3 years ago, I you'd be hard pressed to argue it's improved in any meaningful way. Injuries have set her back. Sure. Absolutely. But there's certain things about her as a powerhouse monster heel that are not there. And I am not seeing a road to there from here. And watching Kairi Sane get tossed in the corner and land on her neck, yeah, I hope she's not hurt. And I think, as we're taping today, there's no report that she's hurt, and that's great. But I think, the struggle that people have, myself included, is watching energy be dumped into Nia Jax when really Nia Jax at this point should be the heel gatekeeper for babyfaces moving up the card. They beat Nia Jax on their way to their title shot.
Well, if they knew how to build baby faces, it'd be much better. But look, Nia has a twofold issue with me in that she has a history of having hurt women on the roster. The Becky Lynch one being the most famous one, where she potatoed her in the nose and made Becky a star pretty much. So it's one of those blessings in disguises. She got concussed out of the match with Ronda. And then they turned it into her most profitable gimmick. So that's nice. But at the same time, Nia also leans into this on her social media. I mean, it's one of those weird things, because it's the internet bubble type thing, that this might just be the internet talking. So you kind of have to take it with a grain of salt. But when Nia kind of like laughs at, how tough she is, and I'll punch this woman in the face and all these other things. You're like, all right, Nia, look, I get it. But for me, I think she needs more overhead lifting, because it looks like there's some problems, controlling things when she's trying to lift things over her head. But that's from a layman's perspective.
Wasn't that where her injury was, too? She had like a leg injury, but I thought she also had an upper body injury as well.
Leg injury still affects that, too.
So. Yeah, sure, absolutely. Yeah, no, for sure.
I can see that excuse. I'm not the biggest Nia fan in the world. I think she does have a certain presence. I think she's also sort of used incorrectly. I always liked, I forgot who she teamed with, but it was like one of those small person, big person teams, which
it was Alexa and Nia.
Yes. I loved that dynamic.
And that was fun.
Until
they did the weight thing. And I mean, the other thing is on the microphone, Nia Jax, she's had some good moments sprinkled in here, but by and large, the material's not been there, but she just doesn't kind of carry it on the mic like that. So, I think that she's being misused, and the frustration over Kairi Sane and what happened in the ring with Kairi Sane is what you're talking about with the body of work of injuring people, and then also the way that Japanese talent has been treated on this product.
We'll get to see her climb a ladder.
Oh, well, God. But will she be able to do it on a tall building, Jeff?
Oh, man, I hope there's no wind. I think they're pre-taping that. I hope they're pre-taping that.
I have been really thinking about the wind thing. I got really preoccupied after we brought it up on the air of, like, the logistics of, like, putting up, like, a windscreen, or how do you film that? What's that even going to look like? I'm very confused.
I am as well, and I do think they're gonna want that live as opposed to taped. And I just think, oh, that's a dangerous proposition. But you know, you don't hope for that, but you just hope that cooler heads will prevail on certain things. So, speaking of this week's news, it turns out that Drake Maverick has been fired. And they are using this story within the story, but he has not been rehired.
This was so stunning. I was reading this headline as I was watching NXT today. So I watched on Friday, and then this headline comes out, and I just messaged Jeff a few minutes prior, like, what the hell are they using this Spud promo from when he was crying and everything? Like, what? And so then I was like, maybe he's still in the company. And then I was going, God, that's really perverse. They've been firing all these people, but they're going to use a firing angle as a way of threading together this Cruiserweight thing? Really? But they kept Drake Maverick. And so I was kind of happy for Drake Maverick because I was like, well, at least they're giving him something, and this makes him kind of an underdog, and he's kind of sympathetic. And then I find out that he was fired. So, like, this company is horrible, Jeff. I am not a fan of this company.
It's very weird because these types of angles have happened before with kayfabe firings.
Right. Oh, yeah, all the time.
And what happens is the audience naturally gets a groundswell for the underdog and ends up, you know, cheering him on in the end and loud cheers and stuff like that. WWE with an empty audience type of thing doesn't have to worry about anybody turning on him. They can just do this story. And I'm somewhat fascinated. I think it's going to help Spud in the end. I'll call him Spud. I will not call him by his other name. but to a larger point.
It's just fascinating because you almost had the groundswell thing. The thing that you're talking about, you had a digital version of that.
Yes, you did.
A COVID-19 2020 version of that. What you could do right now. And people were behind Spud. I think if they had booked the Cruiserweight tournament, a round robin thing a little bit differently, all of a sudden if Spud ends up being the Cruiserweight champion at the end of this, you're like, okay. And I kind of proved myself wrong from earlier in this show and saying that I think you're going to have a hard time getting people over in this time. I think you would have actually gotten Spud over. But to do this, I mean, just the worst of all possible worlds merged together.
No, I thought of something much worse. I did. I love your idea. Spud wins the title. Vince comes out. You're fired anyways. Takes the belt from him, walks off, and you people are still going to watch every week.
he steps on a scale, weighs in at 203, and takes the belt and declares himself Cruiserweight champion.
It's a work scale. Vince McMahon is a Cruiserweight.
I was thinking about this. Like the best move for Vince right now in this time would just be to come back as a monster heel for one last run. He's been such a Mondo dick over the last 3 months anyways. Why not come back and just let us really hate you one last time and just get the heat?
Let him beat the New Day for the tag belts.
I mean, if you're going to run the company like this anyways, why not just go all in?
Oh, I love that. We are in rough times right now, and the economy is going to get back up and running. And when that happens, people are going to be looking for work. And hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. A place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates, and that place is ZipRecruiter.com/VOW. Now, ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job sites, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. You can even add screening questions to your job listing so you can filter candidates to focus on the best ones. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post there get a quality candidate within the first day. And right now, to try ZipRecruiter for free, my listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/VOW. That's ZipRecruiter.com/VOW. ZipRecruiter.com/VOW. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. We'll get there eventually, guys. But for the Wednesday night wars, in terms of the shows, here's why I loved it, Chris. Here's why I say love. I think they nailed it on every vignette they did.
Vignettes!
With the exception, maybe, of the Bubbly Bunch, the return. I that just was not my thing. I didn't find that funny at all.
The thing that did pop me was that they were doing it for a thing of hand sanitizer. It could have been a little bit better if it was like hand sanitizer and like toilet paper, like the idiot's COVID-19 survival kit. I did like that, but the Bubbly Bunch also missed for me as well.
Yeah, I'll get into the vignettes in a sec, but there's a note about Q1 that I wanted to make. It's another thing. They're asking Vince about this stuff, and he goes, well, you know, we're just going to have to rely on, you know, the movies and personality profiles. And my ears went up because
there's a bit of personality.
Well, personality profiles, the exact term is kind of the pet term of Les Thatcher, who used to be an announcer with Smoky Mountain. He was an announcer, I believe, with the NWA. He was an announcer with USWA, also a big-time trainer in the Cincinnati, Ohio area. He trained John Moxley originally. But he does a show called Wrestling Weekly over on Figure Four with Vic Sosa. And, I mean, it was almost like a broken record. It's like, well, what they really need to do to be better is, you know, some personality profiles, things like that. Hearing Vince say that, I go, Les Thatcher is rolling over in his not yet grave because they've never wanted to do that. But my God, Chris, this week they made Jack Gallagher's tattoos interesting on a 30-second vignette about it. And you may hate
it. It put a twist on the Gentleman Jack thing. It you may not like the character. I still don't like the character. I still think it's a move in the wrong direction for this guy. But like, what is done is done. What I will say is that the tension of Gentleman Jack still being there and like him saying Gentleman Jack's my fighting name and stuff like that, that little wrinkle, that simple line made this character more interesting than I thought this character was 3-4 weeks ago. So that's a win.
Yeah. The El Hijo del Fantasmo promo where he's, you know, he speaks Spanish into it, you know, the vignette with the suit and everything. I think they're doing that Kaiser Soze thing though. I think he's going to be a good guy under the mask and a bad guy without the mask. I do. I think he's the guy behind his own kidnapping. I mean, that was well done.
That would make some sense. That would also fit generally with my boy's career. He tends to be a Rudo more than a face. But, like, it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out. International talent has not been handled very well by this company. So anytime an international talent comes in, I've just been revising down my expectations. And I love this guy. You know, I was a huge King Cuerno fan.
Yeah. And he could speak great English. That's the thing. Yes. So I think it's one of those things where he speaks Spanish as the good guy.
So like that all of a sudden becomes a very interesting wrinkle. And he does speak
my money. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of using international talent, I thought Kushida looked great this week.
Yeah, I agree with that. No, and I thought that the commentary did a really nice job putting over the prowess of Kushida, which has been – it's been a real hard time getting a handle on this guy. Narratively, the look's still kind of not quite there. But, like, I feel like Tom really understands how to talk about Kushida and what to accentuate.
Yeah, I think Tom – very underappreciated, I think, as a play-by-play guy when he's not getting yelled
inside of their system, yeah, absolutely.
You know, the Gargano Candice dinner scene. Chris, I know it's look, I love unrepentant stupidity. So the cup being in a glass case on the dinner table, I was dying. That they're eating dinner.
I like that it was in a decorative table. In a decorative position too, like artistically displayed. So like at first I had to like stare at it, I was like, Oh my God, jeez Louise. No, so it was a little campy. It was a little long. I get what they were trying to do, and I think they slightly missed the mark. But, I mean, like, it's an improvement, right? It's interesting. And now we know what Johnny and Candice's mission is. And that's always important.
Candice is kind of doing a knockoff of Killer Frost from the Flash TV show type of thing where – or, you know, she's one character as a good guy, but you can see her kind of morph. And so the hair color kind of changes when she's a heel.
And the whole, what, you know, what is being everyone's friend get you? Let everyone else eat first so that I could eat second, that sort of thing. I think the problem or the thing that missed the mark for me was Johnny talking about how, like, good guys don't get reward and stuff. And I think the issue is that that is actually kind of true right now.
It's a little too close to true.
It's too true right now. And so, like, it makes his heelishness justified. And I think that one thing that this story is missing is, like, Johnny's heel turn, I think, really needs to be more uncalled for, I think, to really get Tommaso over as the victim.
Well, I think they've just moved on from Tommaso because they're going to do the Killer Cross thing or Karrion Cross or whatever.
Right, right. That's true. That's true.
But, I mean, what other vignettes were there that you could think of on the Wednesday? Oh, the Drake Maverick one, which just, God, he's the best promo in NXT right now.
Absolutely. I know. He's an amazing underdog. Like he's a great heel, too. He's a really great, talented performer. But as an underdog, it's so easy to pull for this guy. And I mean, even what I love about Drake too, is that as an underdog, because he is so small, he's also so talented as an underdog performer, you're rooting for him to get the submission hold on. And it's so weird to have a babyface underdog that you're rooting for to get a submission on. And like, you're doing the tap, tap, tap thing for like a babyface who's pint sized. He's so good. It's so clearly so underappreciated.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, and AEW had some good ones too. This was the first Brody Lee one I really, really enjoyed because I can hear that interview in my head from Vince about being a college football player, and that means you're self-made.
Opening up with the height, yeah, and whole self-made thing, yes.
And that guy is one of the throwaway. He was one of the Sean Spears tag team partners that he walked out on. I can't remember his name offhand, but he'll be fine. I loved the Cody vignette in the beginning. I thought that was great. I thought the Darby.
Yeah, I thought that was really good. Yeah, that was also good.
Fun. MJF is MJF. You know, you can't hate that guy. But yeah, it amazed me. I sat back and I went, this is the first week of wrestling I have been so excited to talk about because the vignettes were so good. And that's all I want is some personality, some storytelling. It doesn't have to be an over-the-top exposition type thing. Just get me involved. The Matt Hardy one.
I like the Matt Hardy one the most. Yeah. I think the wrinkle of normal Matt and broken Matt, yes, kind of playing back and forth, like what you're talking about with Hijo del Fantasma. I just think that is a more – the faces of Hardy thing, which also would fit in perfectly with the Hardy Boys' reverence for Mick Foley. So, like, I liked that. I love the twist on Matt. Jericho, I think he's fantastic as a heel commentator, especially if you are a fan of, like, old school Jesse the Body Ventura when he was good and actually applying himself, like in the late 80s or whatever. Not like disengaged WCW Jesse the Body, who's fun, but in different ways. But like, I like Jericho, but it is too overbearing on the show still, because he is a player character as well.
He also starts to slur later in the night.
Yeah.
And it's weird because Shivani is doing this, and I love Shivani, but he is really kind of it's awesome, and I'm cool with it. But he's channeling David Crockett in a lot of ways, the enthusiasm for baby faces, and you know.
Because you kind of have to do that with Jericho, because Jericho is like with heels, there are with all baby faces, they're idiots. So like it forces Shivani to recalibrate almost to that Crockett level.
Yeah, he was rooting for one of the, I think that law guy, I can't remember his name, but he was actually Chris starts up and goes, are you rooting for the guy? He goes, well, you know, I just want to see a young kid do well on the show. I was like, perfect answer, Tony. Nice job out of you.
Yeah, no, I thought that that was good. Jericho continues to do, like, Pineapple Pete. I mean, like, that guy, he is going to be cursed with this Pineapple Pete nickname.
Dunkinton?
Yeah. And you know, I think there some would make the argument, oh, well, you know, it's getting him over. You remember Pineapple Pete, but Pineapple Pete is an entry-level name.
Also,
you don't want to be Pineapple Pete.
Of interest to the Voices of Wrestling family, if you followed WrestleNomics, on the heel side this week as one of the extras, one Chris Mukigana Harrington, EVP of BS, out there standing next to Anna Jay during the during the last match, and then during the Kenny Omega match. Kenny walked by him and kind of looked at him. He wasn't wearing a hat, so a lot of people didn't recognize him.
Yeah, he gave him like he pointed at Harrington. Yeah, it was funny.
Mookie's great. He goes, no, that's not me. Good Mookie wears a hat.
Right. Yeah, that's heel Mookie. That makes perfect sense, honestly. So the Omega jobber match.
Into the controversy of kicking out of the V trigger?
I had no problem with him kicking out of the V trigger.
Was it the V trigger, or was it like some bad version of One Winged Angel? I can't even remember.
It was the V trigger. Okay. Yeah, I mean. Okay, so I think it should have been over faster, but, you know, whatever. They needed to fill television time. I saw everyone really up in arms about it, but it's, like, totally a thing that gets talked about online and forgotten about in real life sort of thing to me. Like, you just won't remember it a month from now.
The most interesting corollary I found, I forgot who was talking about with the Voices of Wrestling guys, but someone was comparing it to one of the matches on 605 once between Ric Flair and George South. And George South got offense in on Ric Flair on the champ. And basically Rick went into the match and goes, tonight you're going to be Ricky Steamboat. And it was one of those things where, you know, with a crowd, of course, everybody's getting behind George South that maybe this is his night to beat the champ. And, you know, then people crush dreams, and that's fun for everybody. But
yeah, so to that point, I mean, the problem with that formula, I don't think that's what they were doing, but I think the problem with that formula is, like, I don't think you don't have an audience there, so you can't really tell that story, right? Like, the joy of Ric Flair having a competitive match with the Gambler or something, like, is you're like, whoa.
For the Gambler.
Yeah, like whoa, wait a second. Maybe the Gambler might pull this one out. It's like, what? Why is the Gambler hitting a DDT? You know, and the joy is being there live and, like, Flair getting you to bite that, like, maybe the Gambler's going to win this match somehow. Like, that's fun, and the Gambler helps you get on board with that, too. I never thought that, and to that point, I never thought that Omega was in any real peril of losing the match. And so, like, in that sense, it was more competitive than it needed to be. I thought maybe, like, it's a little bit of an interesting characterization from Omega where he had, like, a little bit of a heelish swagger. So maybe the long-term important component of this is that, like, the Page-Omega split is ultimately going to result in Omega being the heel and Page being the face.
That'd be interesting. I'd be down for that. I really liked the Darby Allin Sammy Guevara match. I did, and that's not usually not my jam, but I liked it a lot.
Yeah, yeah, same. I think those two guys work together really, really well. And I like both of them. To your point, like neither one is my jam. Neither one is not my jam. But like they're just, you know, they're all right. But like together, like they really had some really nice chemistry.
Anything else from AEW you want to hit on? Because there's not a lot of WWE stuff. We'll go through the matches on NXT and I think call it a day because there's no NXT UK. Those are clip shows. There's no 205 Live. They're now doing weird. I guess last week they decided not to do 205 Live and instead do Brian Kendrick tells you about matches he liked from WWE, which is was a weird call to me. It made me think that they weren't going to, that maybe 205 Live has been scrapped in some ways.
Yeah, my understanding on that is that it is tentative. and there are many people who are in the dark about that, that not just out here on the microphone.
Well, yeah, well, they fired the announcing team on that day, so it'd probably be hard to do a show on the fly right then.
But yeah.
Anything else in AEW?
I don't think so. It was a good show, though. I enjoyed it. I really did. I thought that there was a lot to like.
Wednesday night was a fun night. It didn't, maybe not the greatest night in the history of our sport, but it was definitely a fun night.
Okay, Shivani.
You could pick up and down. Well, look, I just want to have fun occasionally. I don't want.
No, you said the greatest night in the history.
No. Well, yeah,
that's a Shivaniism. That's all. I was just.
Yes, I did that on purpose. I didn't think.
And that's why I refer. You know what? You ruin comedic pacing. Like you deconstruct comedy to the point where it's a horrible thing that everyone loves.
I kill fun. And
yes, and that's another demerit on your record.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. We'll talk about Deep Space Nine later.
Yeah, okay, sounds great. Garrett's a great character.
When we stop recording, we'll talk.
Oh, okay, whatever.
So NXT, Raquel Gonzalez and Dakota Kai defeated Shotzi Blackheart and Tegan Nox. Right person lost. This is what Shotzi Blackheart's supposed to be doing, in my opinion.
Yeah, totally fine with her losing. Not a Shotzi Blackheart fan. She is very just there for me.
Yeah, I wish it's weird because while they did get Raquel Gonzalez a lot of, you know, building the giant type thing, and Raquel Gonzalez, there is a moment in this match where she catches somebody that she had no business catching and powers her up. I forget which one of these two it was, but the person kind of slipped or had jumped a little short, and Raquel Gonzalez caught her like down beneath her knees and still lifted her up. It was.
We're talking about monster powerhouses. Whew, Gonzalez has it, dude.
Impressive.
She is. And she's, I mean, she's fresh. Like, think about where she'll be in 5 years compared to Nia Jax.
I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, look, if someone had done that with Nia would have dropped her and they would have probably had to have done some sort of spot to get the person back up. But I'd like to have Dakota be a little bit more of the brains of the operation.
Right, like the dynamic between Dakota and Raquel is so generic heel and like, yeah, Kai's the leader and Raquel's the heavy, but like that, there's just what's making Dakota tick these days? You know, like I liked the knee brace thing. That's a great starting place,
her
but
look
like
is fantastic right
now. Yeah.
I mean, the black and the white really looks good on her in terms of the dark makeup and other things like that. And she was really hot off of that turn in Survivor Series. And I'm afraid that they're trying to siphon it off onto Raquel as opposed to making them a real unit.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe it even ends up where Dakota Kai's kind of managing Raquel and like Raquel becomes the focus and Dakota becomes the smaller friend who's the henchwoman, which would be the complete wrong casting in this dynamic.
Well, I forgot to go through the beginning. There was apparently an incident at the NXT training center knocking Finn Balor out of the main event tonight. So it was agreed upon that, Adam Cole enters the venue, accused Velveteen Dream of trying to weasel his way into a title shot. The Undisputed Era attacked Dream from behind and Keith Lee ran to save him. And let me holla at you, player. There'll be a tag team match later. We may not see Velveteen Dream for a while.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I threw that at you. Sorry.
Oh, he's a bit of a sneaky snake. The Finn Balor thing really might come back to bite him. Commissioner Regal will be very upset about that.
Well played, Mr. Levitard. Okay, yes. Look, we can't talk about the Dream.
I need to know more to really be able to speculate. Like, what we know coming to air sounds really bad. And if what we know is, or what we've heard is accurate, that would be a very bad thing. And you won't see him on TV anytime soon. But I don't know enough to really speculate beyond that. So I'll leave it in the hands of Commissioner Regal for right now.
One vignette that was interesting, or at least an interview that was interesting, was Jake Atlas, who...
wanted to talk about the Atlas twist there at the end, where he was like, I was really rooting for the guy. It kind of feels disingenuous.
That was I understand. Yeah, you don't do that. You do the, hey, you know what? I feel bad for him, but I'm in this tournament too. It's not, man, I'm really rooting for you to beat me.
He might be turning heel during the course of this tournament is kind of what I'm thinking. I know they present him as a face.
They present him as a face. They don't look. He's gay. He's a big proponent of representation in wrestling, but they never mention that. They just kind of allude to it. And if you know it, you get it. But if you don't know it, you don't get it. I don't understand that. And No.
If it's going to be part of his character, make it part of his character. Or if it's not going to be part of his character at all,
They're scared.
I know. And like, this is kind of trying to have your cake and eat it too, right?
Yeah, but you remember the Darren Young story was that, yeah, sure, Darren Young, the guy playing him, Fred whatever, is gay. But the character of Darren Young is straight.
Except that, like, he changed his entrance move to the equal sign, and he even changed the name of his finishing move to something about equality as well. So, like, that never quite scanned either. And as I said, if you want to play into it right around that, that's great. If you don't want to make that part of the characterization of the character, then just don't bring it up at all. This person is a graveyard digger. Like, you know, we don't know the Undertaker, the character's sexual orientation. We know that Mark is married. But, like, you know what I mean? Like, you can do that.
I liked the Atlas Maverick match a little more than some other pundits.
I liked it. No, I thought, as I said, I liked the whole dynamic of the underdog trying to chase the submission. I thought that Drake Maverick did a really good job with that.
Yeah, I think that was the LGBT DDT. I don't know if they're going to call it that, but. That's a damn good move.
That's a cool move.
That's in front of a crowd is great. You know, you can't compare NXT to pro wrestling guerrilla people. Okay, it's not the same.
You should be happy that you're having a satisfactory work rate style match on WWE TV. I compare NXT to the WWE main roster style of wrestling. And so when you're getting
Jake Atlas is winning a match after the way they presented him on his debut.
Also true. Yeah, no, so like it's part of this is tailoring expectations to the thing that you're actually watching, and you'll be a lot happier in many facets of your life if you go into the experience with realistic expectations of what to expect out of that experience.
Kushida defeated Tony Nese in the most fun match between either Kushida or Tony Nese in a long, long time. Look, Tony Nese has been doing great work, but this was fun. I loved this match quite a bit. I thought Kushida, other than the Walter match, maybe, this is his best showing in NXT yet.
This was way better than Kushida versus Tony Nese, if you had told me at the start of the week, was going to be. Right, like, because the way they present Kushida and the way they've presented Tony Nese, if you've been watching either of them for any length of time, especially if you know their work in other places.
Yeah, Tony Nese goes through his motions in most of these matches.
Totally. No, I know, right. And then, like, the commentary was on and Kushida was really engaged and there was, like, a good, coherent story to this match. Like, there was just so much more to this match. Because, the big knock we've had with Tony has been the moves look good, but they're never part of a more coherent story,
right.
Or part of something that even not even a story, just coherent sequences. They're just really good looking moves with no rhyme or reason necessarily. But that was not what was going on here at all.
Yeah. The top rope hoverboard lock, Spanish fly type thing. I popped hard for, I loved this match. I did. Won't be my favorite of the year, but I really, it was one of those things where I'm watching this. I'm like, yeah, I'm digging this week's wrestling. So we had Riddle and Thatcher. There's that interview. It's one of those where I go back and forth on it. With the
it was pretty dumb, but it was kind of fun.
Yeah.
Like,
I have brown eyes.
Yeah. Okay, well, what will make this fun to me is if Riddle leans even more into trying to be this guy's friend, and then Thatcher goes all Frank Grimes on Homer Simpson and just loses it.
I think that has to happen. That has to happen.
Like it needs to start off where, like, Thatcher, like, especially the way they've set this up, where he's like, I respect the tag team titles. I don't want them. Somewhere along the way, Thatcher needs to lose it on Riddle and be like, this guy doesn't respect the tag team
titles.
Why
do you people cheer this guy? Goofy jokes and all of the
I'm a technician. This guy is doing whatever. He comes back in smelling like some weird cologne. He's walking around telling people that they got blue eyes. You can't even see this guy's eyes. They're like clams. This guy's your champion. I am a polished wrestler. I've lost my teeth for this. I'm a master of technique. I know how to grab holds. And you guys cheer for this loser, this dope? And like, Riddle's like, whoa.
In the midst of this, he gets electrocuted, and we have a funeral. And then Timothy Thatcher, all his friends called him Thatchy, will remember him for his deep, beautiful blue eyes.
If it's a short run and it ends with Riddle doing a eulogy for Thatcher, never fully appreciating how much Thatcher hates him and like has contempt for him, that would actually be quite funny.
You know, I wouldn't mind a few weeks of Thatcher just being pissed at him and Matt Riddle just being oblivious. I'm like, you upset about something? Oh, okay, cool.
You sure you don't want to be champions? And Thatcher keeps grumpily saying, like, no, I'll never be like it. It needs to be when he turns on Riddle, it needs to be, completely sympathetic towards Riddle. And Riddle needs to ham it up.
Yeah. Mia Yim defeated Jesse Kamiya, the former Jesse Elaban. Oh, Chris, this goes into my wheelhouse of how I hate repackagings that go in one direction. Jesse Elaban had a great character. Is a little Bailey-esque from NXT at first call. And she'd host this talk show on the Florida circuit called The Jesse Show. And it was like being a gawky 16-year-old girl who was a professional wrestler. I know that we smart types don't like these things. We think it's stupid. We think it's too childish. It's beneath our intelligence. But casual fans eat these types of characters up. And then what do they do?
They do the same old repackaging. She's Vanessa Bourne. And that the Vanessa Bourne template is a template that they've tried with countless characters. It's the way that they repackaged Raquel Gonzalez, who we like a lot in terms of a talent, but like her look is essentially what they did with Daria when they turned her into Sonya Deville. Like, this company only knows how to like repackage and edge people up in one specific way.
Yes, they think guys only want to sleep with women, and that's the only way to market them. And the unfortunate part is Jesse is still kind of awkward. And what was once charming is now going to be an even bigger detriment.
I was watching her try to do a promo online here this week, and I was like, ooh, this needs work, was my notes.
Yeah,
sometimes you watch someone try to be a jerk woman, and it plays better and it's more believable, right? Like, who do we like over in NXT UK? Her name's eluding me right now. Ginny. Like we like Ginny. Yeah, yeah, Ginny's great.
If Ginny was a smiling, happy cheerleader, nobody would buy it.
It wouldn't ring. And kind of similarly, sometimes people try to play the Ginny type of character, and it just rings hollow. And that's what's going on here.
It's just, oh, you're just being a jerk. You don't really believe what you're saying right now. Whereas with Ginny or Kaylee Ray, you believe that they're kind of, there's a little bit of evil in them, even if it's not real evil, and they're just turning that part up.
Yeah, Shayna Baszler, slightly different character, but like Shayna Baszler, you truly believe that like this person's got a bit of a twisted streak in her.
But it also goes to the straight ahead good guy or good woman. You know, that's...
Oh, and this company really avoids that. They don't know how to book that in a strong way that's believable, despite, you know, the Hogan push being the most successful thing that this company's ever really done, other than Stone Cold Steve Austin.
El Hijo del Fantasma defeated Jack Gallagher. Again, I kind of liked this more than most people. I thought it was very hard-hitting.
Yeah, I thought it was hard-hitting. It was an okay match. It's not, like, the best El Hijo del Fantasma match, but it's also, like, one of his first matches in the company. So, like, what are you expecting?
Oh, just reading through the results, I remember another vignette I loved the Damian Priest one.
That was a very interesting wrinkle into like misconstruing Keith Lee as a guy who's handpicking his title shot opponents and turning the people's champion thing kind of on its ear into, oh, you say you're the people's champion, but what you're really doing is handpicking your opponents. So it looks like you're doing title defenses and you're doing ones that you're going to win. I liked that, man.
It's a very Sean O'Hare move.
Oh, and that's one of my favorite, like, failed gimmicks of all time.
Yeah. That's why it's speaking to you. I agree. I love that. And his voice is so badass.
That also kind of fits into the Sean O'Hare template,
too. Yeah, because Sean O'Hare for me was that's the dude when I was in my 20s. That's who I wanted to look like. I mean, he had, you know, full head of hair. You know, he had the little goatee, but, you know, clean shaven.
I love that you immediately moved to that. I would have moved to, like, he has, like, an amazing – he was, like, shredded, dude.
Chris,
I
miss my hair, and I'm growing it out during this quarantine, and it looks like shit.
It's fair. No, I was thinking of all the things that Sean O'Hare possessed. Like, he looked great at his peak. Yeah.
He was fantastic looking, and he could move. And he and Jindrak were just awesome. I loved Jindrak and O'Hare.
They were really good. Yeah, no, if you've never watched any of those matches, those guys were super talented.
And also, if you've if you listen to the Gallows and Anderson have revitalized their podcast, they had Jindrak on, a.k.a. Marco Corleone. And he was hilarious. He was fantastic. Go
Nice.
Really worth the download. And then in our main event, what started out as Velveteen Dream and Keith Lee beating Adam Cole, Roderick Strong, turned into Velveteen Dream and Dexter Lumis beat the Undisputed Era.
This is so weird. This is like turning Lumis face. Like, well, here's what's really weird. Based on what we were speaking sort of conjecturally about earlier in the episode, if Velveteen Dream is no longer part of the storyline, are we on the verge of Dexter Lumis face push?
There's a lot weird about this because you have the Velveteen Dream, for lack of a better term, sexuality type of thing with the Dexter Lumis creepy stalker type of gimmick together. That just makes this tag team just...
They're both. You need to take a shower after watching this tag team.
I think Lumis's look screams bodyguard to me, and I just don't. If they're gonna do a love story with him and Velveteen Dream type of thing, where Lumis eventually turns on him, I guess that's okay.
That's if they can do that story. That'd be interesting, and it has always felt like Lumis is there for the Dream and not for the Undisputed Era, but maybe that's the twist. Maybe we're supposed to think, oh, he's actually, maybe he really is there to take out the Undisputed Era. This is a real head scratcher, and I'm surprised that Dexter Lumis is who we're turning to in our main event angle right now.
Yeah, and of course, if one tag team partner leaves or falls, it's okay within the rules of tag team wrestling, apparently, to just jump up on the apron and get a tag. I understand people's problem with this. It made no sense.
No, it made no sense. And it was a very weird way to get there from here.
But WWE Absolutely. Does that from time. This is how Nikki Cross also got debuted on the main roster, I believe.
Oh, yeah, right, right.
Sunday. Yeah. She just ran down and jumped on the apron, took a tag, and won the match. And you're like, okay. yeah, so, that's what we got. The Mia Yim, Charlotte Flair stare down. Thought it was okay. I'm finding the Charlotte Flair story more interesting than stuff she did on the main roster.
Yeah, that's how I'd put it. It's like the tough part whenever you start up a new champion, especially in NXT, is the first few title defenses are really kind of to get them going. So I'm
into. I don't know how you do her story without hurting that NXT women's division.
Because right,
if she cleans
right.
out, like if she was offering non-title matches to everybody, I would have her lose to everyone. I would. I'd have her lose to everybody. And then everybody's arguing over who should get the first shot. And then Io Shirai right. goes, hey, I get the first shot because I won the ladder match. And then if there's any scraps, you can pick it up. So then you have...
That's a way more classic Flair move, too. Have her win the title and then lose a series of non-title matches. Like, for six weeks straight, and have people talking about how Charlotte Flair is the champion, but she's on a losing streak.
Yeah, and then she's doubting herself and whether or not she's made for this new generation of women. You have Io Shirai, who's just an absolute killer, doing whatever psychotic crap Io Shirai wants to do, because Io Shirai is awesome. And then maybe you have Charlotte win that match against Io Shirai, which makes
by it, going super heel by like by realizing like
oh yeah because she's still a baby face
by having her the 6 week losing streak forces her into a state of panic, and during the course of that title match she really goes full dirtiest player in the game to win that match, ref bump, every dirty trick in the book to win that, and then after that peacocking around like she really did something.
Man, I'm forgetting everything this week. Robert Stonebrand was interesting too this week.
Huh. Oh, I guess I missed this. What did they do?
They did. It was just kind of like a bikini shot thing with, God, I already forgot her name. Chelsea Green and Robert Stone in a pool.
Okay.
It was right before the other vignette that they played, before the Jack Gallagher one. It was very short, but it was very good.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, at least it added something.
This is what we've been calling for. I mean, and again, think about it like this, too. Imagine if these shows were edited down to 1 hour instead of 2 hours, and they were just a super tight 1 hour show. I think you'd have the bang bang action that you and I have been kind of calling for to make these studio shows feel a little more lively.
Yeah. Anything else for the week that was, given that we only kind of really watched one WWE show? I watched Raw, but SmackDown hasn't happened yet. Anything floating out there that we may have forgotten?
I don't think so. I think we hit all that we can hit for right now, and if anything interesting happens on SmackDown, we'll cover it on the next exciting episode of Shake Them Ropes.
Yeah, we'd like to thank Roman and ZipRecruiter for sponsoring this week's Shake Them Ropes. Chris is also playing guitars and fixing up guitars and giving lessons and whatnot, and also recording political podcasts and watching a lot of Deep Space Nine. Chris, plug what you're doing.
So I am rewatching Deep Space Nine right now to have the ultimate compendium of Morn related memes. Morn is one of the barflies at Quark's bar. And I need to be your one-stop shop for all Morn related memes. And so that's really what at Chris Novembrino, the Twitter account's now devoted to. Politics and wrestling are dead. We're only doing Morn over there. If you're looking for guitar lessons, go to TaylorRobinsonMusic.com. If you go to TaylorRobinsonMusic.com, you can book a webcam lesson with me through there, which would be really awesome and helpful, as I am currently doing that for money. That is my job. So if you've ever wanted to learn guitar or bass, want to learn music theory, I've got PDFs and stuff. It's fun. So you can sign up there over at TaylorRobinsonMusic.com. Don't worry about the government. It can be found on iTunes and Stitcher. And you, of course, can support it by going to Patreon.com/DWATG.